Welcome to the History Slam podcast from ActiveHistory.ca. Here's your host, Sean Graham.
Thank you, Adam. Welcome to the History Slam, everybody. I am Sean Graham coming at you today, nearly live from Ottawa, Ontario. Great episode for you today. Talking about a wonderful new initiative, the Six Seasons Project. This is a large group effort designed in part to help tell Indigenous stories. And the group has published a new book entitled The Gift of the Little People by Rocky Cree storyteller William Dumas. This is a graphic novel that tells the story of the first encounters of the Rocky Cree people with European fur traders on what is now known as Hudson Bay and the resulting endemic, which was very damaging to the people there. And the story has been told generation to generation. Now, William, along with the rest of the Six Seasons Project team, have put it together in a graphic novel. It's a wonderful book, and it's a story that obviously, when you're talking about the endemic side of this, has great relevance to today. But overall, the story has a lot of universal themes, very powerful, very moving. And I was fortunate enough to talk with William Dumas, the author of the book, along with Warren Cario, who is the director of the Center for Creative Writing and Oral Culture at the University of Manitoba. Two of them are leading the story team as part of the Six Seasons Project, which is doing more than storytelling. It's involved in reclaiming Indigenous languages and history and knowledge. So it's a great initiative. Check the show notes and I will link to the project. And at the end of the episode, Warren talks about it a little bit. And William, throughout the episode, the both of them really reference the larger project and where the book fits into that. But through the course of the discussion, we focus mostly on the book and the storytelling. I was particularly interested in the process of taking an oral history and how that translates when you put it down on the page. So I very much enjoyed this discussion. I hope you will as well. So let's get right to it. My chat with William Dumas and Warren Cario. William Dumas and Warren Cario, join me now. Gentlemen, how are you today?
I am fine.
Great to be here.
Well, I'm very excited to have the two of you here to discuss The Gift of the Little People. And William, let's start with you and what your motivation was for this project and what brought you to want to tell this particular story at this particular moment.
I think I've always been interested in the stories of the Rocky Cree. And when I was an educator, the students that I taught had amazing stories of encounters with the little people. So therefore, I started gathering their stories, listening to them. In fact, this was supposed to have been a unit. Even adults came to listen to the stories and share their experiences. So that's been the motivator, is having these stories, recording them, and getting them published. It's going to take a few years, but we hope we can do more in that storyline.
Warren, for you, how do you come to this? What's the relationship with William, and how do you relate to the stories and his motivation that he just talked about of bringing these stories to younger people?
Well, I'm part of a project that William is also deeply connected in that's called the Six Seasons of the Assiniskiawit Inuwik, or the Rocky Cree people. And so it's a collaboration between a number of scholars at different universities in Canada focused at the University of Winnipeg, and Rocky Cree knowledge keepers and storytellers like William. And so we got a grant from the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council to work for 7 years on creating books for young people out of the stories of William's community and William's own family. And so this is one of those stories that William brought us all together as part of our group and told us this story that he'd heard from his dad, and so that was the beginning point for turning this into a picture book, and it's been such an amazing experience for us to work on all the different books in the series, so it's just been a real honor to be part of this project.
So the story itself, and we won't give too much away from it, because obviously we want people to get most of the story from the book itself. But it's looking at the Rocky Cree people, their first encounters with fur traders on what is labeled on maps today as Hudson's Bay. And for you, William, as you heard this story and you're telling the story now on to younger people, and of course it involves an endemic and the disease that came to the Rocky Cree people from those encounters. And I'm just curious about the timing of it. Is this coincidental that this is coming out now, or was there the current event reality that makes this particular story even more relevant to a 2022 audience than maybe it otherwise would have been?
I think working on this project, it is not a project of I. It is a project of we. Academics, grassroots people, knowledge keepers, and elders. By bringing them together, they will start working together and sharing their perspective, because they are already talking about writing a history book for the Rocky Cree people. So it's going to be a long way, but like I said, it's a wee project now. A lot of players involved, and I'm very blessed to have people like Warren, Melanie, Mavis, Doris, Margaret, name it. The crew is just amazing that I work with.
So part of that process then for both of you, I'm curious, would have to be a sense of trust, right? So these stories that are being shared and are being told, obviously, between the two of you, there has to be a really good level of trust that the stories are being told properly, being told accurately. So what was that process like for the two of you and for the larger group in general in building that trust and ensuring that everybody was on the same page as we move forward?
Warren, share your perspective, please. I love putting you on the spot.
I think William may have other thoughts on this, but if you know, from my perspective, as you know, not a Rocky Cree person, but as someone who is, you know, specializes in Indigenous oral traditions, you know, it's so crucial. Stories are all about relationships. And this is something that I've, you know, learned over the years in working with different storytellers, but I really learned it so much with our interactions with William and the other Rocky Cree knowledge keepers, that knowledge doesn't just sort of sit out there by itself. It's relational, and the teachings that are in the stories only make sense and only come out as the relationship is developed. And in a way, the stories create relationships. And, you know, I like to think about stories as sort of engines of relationship. So it's taken time for us to get to know each other and to get to, you know, learn what is, you know, what is the proper way to work with the stories. Mistakes get made, and, you know, and we try to fix those and do it better the next time. But that's, you know, that's my experience of it is, you know, it's been just amazing to get to know the people. That's, you know, probably the most incredible part about this whole process is getting to know the community members and to learn about the stories that they carry. All of them have amazing stories. So you know, my work as a scholar of storytelling, it will never be over, because there's just so much richness of these stories in the community.
You see, with a story like The Gift of the Little People, this is a story that I laid down about 6 years ago. And as it moved on, all of a sudden somebody points out, hey, we're going to be publishing this book during the time of COVID. It was coincidental. But in our culture, we don't believe in coincidental. We believe in inahitpadik. It is time for it to happen. And that's how the story was. It just happened when it was time to happen.
And it certainly is very relevant to a modern audience for that reason. And the other thing I'm curious about, though, is both of you mentioned the oral tradition and stories being passed along orally through generations. Yet this is, of course, a book. It's a published book. So I'd be curious to get both of your thoughts on what needs to be changed, if anything, when taking an oral story and putting it onto paper. Like, how does that change the story, if at all?
Personally, I don't think it changes the story, because in the story, we use Cree words to define what we're saying in the story, because in the language is the definition of what we're talking about. And when we use the language, we are defining what it is that we are saying. And by using the language, I feel we're in a comfort zone. People like Warren and Melanie and those other people, they know quite a few words in Cree and how to pronounce them, which is crucial.
We're learning.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, I think that's a really good point. You know, from my perspective, you know, as we, you know, William, as a storyteller, you know, at this story, when it began for us, you know, he told it to us as a group, and we recorded that. And then, you know, myself and other members of the team, we worked on the transcription. And to a degree, you know, when you just transcribe an oral story, you do need to change some things to make it actually sound more like an oral story, strangely. So we did have to do some editing and some slight changes to conform it to the genre of the written story. But that was also, you know, a key element where we had to go back and forth, wanted to be sure that each version, you know, fit with William's memory of the story and that kind of thing. So often he would, you know, have me read it aloud to him, the latest version, or have someone else read it aloud. So while we're working in the textual medium, we're always going back to the oral, and that's been a really wonderful part, to see how it, you know, keeps recurring back to the oral as well. So that's something that I've, you know, is very different, I think, from most writers and how they would compose.
And I think when you look back at the oral tradition, was not really recognized in the academic world. So now we are trying to ease our way into using that communication line, you know, using the oral tradition, putting it down. Because when I read The Gift of the Little People, I don't hear my voice. I hear my dad's voice. And that's the importance of being able to do oral tradition. You tell the story the way the person does, not the way you want to tell it. Very crucial.
So when Warren is talking about reading the story aloud to you, or having people read the story aloud to you, is that how you sort of verified it in your head, that it sounded like your father when it was being read, that is what was reminiscent to you, as opposed to necessarily the individual points within the story, but that sense of the voice that was coming through?
Absolutely. Because in my home, it's a well-functional home, and I have children that are in their late 20s, you know, into their 40s, that read these, that are going to read these stories to their children. We have one already that's taken up the only book that we have available in the house, taking it and reading it for her children, but also took it to a small community called Grand Rapids. And she did the story with the students in the school where she works. And she said it was a big hit. We got some books to sell there, Warren.
Now, the other part of it too is the visual side of it. So it's not just necessarily the words on the page, but there are images, of course, in the book. So what was that process like? And how did you come across deciding on where the images would come from, how they'd be put together, who had the final say necessarily, if there was a final say? I know it's a team project, on what would be there and layout and that kind of stuff. Because again, oral tradition, one thing to put the words to paper, another to have the images to go along with it, which I'm sure that was a lengthy and very involved process.
Yeah, absolutely. That's we were very fortunate to have a fantastic illustrator, Ryan Brynjolfsson, who was very experienced in doing illustrations for children's books and for a lot of other stories by Indigenous writers too. So she came up with a lot of, you know, really great suggestions about, you know, what parts of the story might be look good to be illustrated. And we had our list of parts that we thought would work as well. So we had some back and forth about that, and she made some mock-ups. And then we also wanted to be sure that the representations of the people, you know, what they were wearing and, you know, how they looked and what their dwellings looked like were historically accurate and represented the community accurately. So we definitely wanted to, and William, you know, talked to all the other knowledge keepers about that as well and showed the images, and we had some, you know, changes that had to be made along the way. So yeah, it was a long process, but again, it was, you know, really interesting to see and to have the knowledge keepers point out things that you know needed to be made more accurate in the process.
And the thing about this work, it's based on trust. And we have other people working in specific areas of the book. So when they started showing me the pictures of the gift of the little people that Ryan was doing, I was blown away. Like, my gosh, this is a beautiful illustrator. We really lucked in, didn't we? You know, just beautiful work she did for this book.
So I want to talk about, this is a book that, and publishers love to do this. They say this is geared for a certain audience, a certain age group, right? This is a thing that publishers love to do. I think there is a universality to this story, though. I don't think if you're not within the age group prescribed by the publisher that you're not going to enjoy this. I think it's worthwhile for anyone to pick it up. But with that as the preface, we were talking before, and I think for both of you, having children learn this story, and not just this story, all the stories that are part of this larger project, is obviously a big motivation. And so William, if we start with you, what is it about ensuring that this story and these all the stories that are part of this project are being told to younger generations? Like, why is that such a priority and so important?
And what we do with the main six books that we're working on, once they're done, there's a teacher's guide that's available with the specific book. And with the teacher's guide, they take it into the classrooms and the students study the book in their classroom along with the teacher's guide. So it happens in different schools, in Winnipeg and in northern Manitoba.
Maybe if I could just add in there in relation to that, just one of the things that, you know, William and I and others on the team have talked about is the just how wonderful it is to think about how these stories as oral stories circulating from one generation to the next, when we turn it into a picture book, then, you know, an adult reads it to a child. And that is, you know, that is sort of a replication of the oral tradition in a way. And the child is, you know, interacting with the book and, you know, and often with the illustrations. And so there's something about the children's book, especially the children's picture book, that is a better analog for oral traditions than other forms of writing, I think. And we've really learned a lot about that. And I think there's a lot more to be explored in that realm.
Absolutely. Because when you look at the work that we're doing right now, we're at the time where the oral tradition is limited to X number of people that are really into sharing and listening to the stories. So students don't get to it because of the technology that's available. They get very little chance to be able to see this information and study it themselves. So that's a blessing in that area, is that they get a chance to study it. The surprising thing that I'm finding out is a lot of adults are reading it also for their own information. And they're very thankful when I see them. They acknowledge me and tell me that they're so thankful that this work is happening. It's a big, big boost.
Why do you think that is, William? Why do you think that you have adults as well who are coming to you? Like what is the story or these stories in general? What do they speak to in people? And what type of whether it's cultural tradition or just the story itself. There's certainly a historical aspect to these stories as well. But what do you think it is that really speaks to people, that when they encounter it, when they engage with the story, it is such a moving experience?
Well, when you look at the history of the story tradition in Rocky Creek, it was not always viewed as a public thing. So it's only now that we're allowed to tell, share our stories. But that's the past. We can't change it. Let's focus on today and say, what are the good things we can do with this information that we have?
Warren, just for you, now, I don't want to be overly flippant about this, but navigating the realities of academic work and what people want published and those sorts of projects, the funding that goes along with it, on your end, when you bring these stories from purely that aspect of it, what is the reaction that you've been getting from folks, whether in faculty? You know, there's of course all the, we can make all the jokes about associate deans that we want, but you know, what has that reaction been for you? And have you had a similar experience as William of people really being moved and touched by the story?
Yeah, I mean, actually, you know, I've been really heartened by the response within the academic community to our project and the goals that we have of you know, creating these stories with the aim of you know, focusing on young people, but with that broader, you know, audience also in mind. And so, yeah, I think maybe within the academic world, there's more openness to, you know, to thinking about different forms of knowledge now and different ways of delivering knowledge, I guess, because, and it, certainly this is something that we've learned with William and other knowledge keepers in the Rocky Creek community. A Cree story may be directed toward a child, but the same story could be retold again and again in someone's life, in different stages of their life.
Yep.
And new teachings can be found in that, right? And so I think we're maybe sort of doing something similar with this book, where you know, people of all ages can really gain something from the story. And I think, you know, I guess the way in which books are tend to be marketed toward a particular age category, I don't think it really fits very well with the Cree sensibility, where these teachings are for everyone, really. And yeah, and we maybe start with the young people, but we want everyone to return to those and think about the complexities of those teachings over their whole lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of speaks a little bit to the, not quite, I don't know if the age of the stories necessarily, but we were talking a little before, the old stories are valuable. And William, you mentioned it specifically to young people, but it seems to me that old stories that continue to be told, and I don't know if old is necessarily the right word either, but these longstanding traditional stories that are told generation to generation show their value in the fact that they are being told generation to generation, that they do have universal themes that are of value independent of what is going on at any given moment. So I'm wondering for you, William, what is the value of having those older stories, those stories that have persevered through generations and continue to be told? What is the importance of having them told, be told to younger generations? And even if you count somebody of my age, you know, mid to late 30s, coming to a story like this, like what is the value of learning these older stories that people might not have been exposed to earlier in their life?
Yes. Don't feel bad about using the word old stories, because I use that word for lack of. When I go into the the mist of time stories, it's different. So for now, because of lack of words, and I think we're developing our lingo, we'll be able to use words that are understood by many. And as we use this language, we educate each other. We take the oral tradition and we say to the public, this is who we are. We are a beautiful people. We are a people that have come through a lot, but we're still beautiful because we're putting our language and our culture together in our stories. So it'll enrich the life of many, not just a few.
And particularly for young people in 2022, certainly young people have access to various forms of media, various forms of storytelling. But a traditional story being told, whether it's in a book or the oral tradition, is that under threat at all? Like the traditional stories in the 21st century? And what is the motivation behind ensuring that those younger generations, the kids of today who are growing up, have access to those stories?
I don't think it's under threat, because with how we influence each other, this work is going to continue whether I'm around or not. There's a lot of gifted storytellers that can work with Warren and the other people. It's a beginning, and that's the beauty of it.
I think maybe just to add, I think the definitely, you know, as you noted, there's a lot of other things competing for the attentions of people, not just young people, but everyone these days. But I really do think there's a real hunger for the kind of interaction that an oral story provides. And maybe they'll come in new forms now. Now we're communicating with video conferencing technology and things like that. But I think there's still a sense that we have of, you know, hearing a story in someone's voice and having that relationship of the story. I think that's still something that people have a hunger for. And to me, this book and the project, the other book projects in our Six Seasons project as a whole, I think they're trying to find other ways of, you know, of creating that oral sensibility and keeping that going into the future. So one of the other books in our series, we've also created an app so that the story is told in a more interactive form. And that's also an interesting way for kids to interact with the story. And so I think there will probably be all kinds of new ways that the next generations of Indigenous storytellers will share their stories through different media as well.
Yeah, and it's a continuation of things that have gone on for a long time. I was reading today about the various ways in which Shakespeare's stories have been told. And even when Shakespeare wrote them, they weren't original to him, a lot of the ideas. They were longstanding story ideas that continue to get retold over and over in maybe slightly different ways to adjust for contemporary audiences and to ensure that they're relevant. But the core tenets of the stories remain the same, and the values and the culture that they represent continue to persist despite the evolution of time and the people who originated those stories being long gone. And I guess when we talk about the cultural aspect of these particular stories, obviously it's a story of the Rocky Cree coming into contact with fur traders. But I would have to imagine that the both of you would agree with me that this is a story that goes beyond, in terms of the lessons and the value of it, goes beyond that geography and that particular
one country. One of the interesting things, Sean, that I've been listening to stories, whether it's Atsadoki, Tapatsimoy, Nakayasi, those stories, one of the things that I started noticing at a very young age, because this has been my area of study, one of the things that I noticed is that there are metaphors in these stories. And it's up to us to figure out what you think the metaphor is for that. For me, I have my own theories. But it would be interesting to find out from young people or adults, what is the metaphor for this specific time that this happened? So there's metaphors. And I think because back then there were no words to define what was happening at the time.
Those metaphors, they have so much teaching in them. And that's one of the things that is so rich about these stories, and how, you know, you can go back and re-listen to a story or have it retold by the storyteller later, and some more teachings come out of those metaphorical aspects of the story. And so like in this story, you know, this story, there's, we won't maybe go into so much detail because we want people to encounter the story directly, but you know, this is a story that's very much about belief, right? This little person shows up and says, you know, we have the medicine for you, but our main character has to believe in that. And will he have the faith to do that? think that's a key part of this story that, you know, people can learn from in other aspects of their existence, of their lives as well.
Yeah, and it speaks to one of the themes out of the book of healing and dealing with traumatic experiences, whether personal, collective, in a spirit of reconciliation. Yes. So we'll wrap, I guess, for the two of you, what is this story? Like, if you had to kind of summarize its meaning to you personally, for folks who obviously will be coming to the book, like what does the story mean to you if you could summarize it, if that's a fair question? Maybe Warren, if we
all
start
right,
with
go
you.
For it, bro.
Sure. I mean, for me, you know, I think, as I said, it is a story about faith and the importance of, you know, trusting in the traditions, and, you know, so the little people are part of the traditions. And so I think that's a crucial element of it. And it's a story of community survival, right? People working together as well to get through a really terrible experience. So those are the two main things, I guess, that I carry away from this story, but there's so much more as well.
And William, yours is, of course, more personal. So.
Yes, but at the same time, the story, besides telling the story of the Rocky Creek people, their story, what I see in it is there's always faith, there's always hope, and we must always remember that no matter what happens, there is hope, there is faith. These things that we can rely, whether you're a believer of a higher power, we all believe that we are being guided on this beautiful journey we're on. Sometimes rough, but it's a good journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very well said. So again, the book is The Gift of the Little People. If anyone wants more information or pick up a copy of the book or wants more information about the wider project, where would you direct them to pick up the book and find out more information about what you guys are doing?
We have a website for our project, which is at sixseasonsproject.org. And I encourage people to check out the information there about The Gift of the Little People. And we've got other books coming out in the series as well.
Terrific. Certainly encourage everybody to check that out. So William Dumas, Warren Cario, thank you so much for joining
me. It's a labor of love for us. Thank you.
So there you have it, my chat with William Dumas and Warren Cario. I thank them for their time. Again, the book is The Gift of the Little People. It is a graphic novel, as we talked about on the interview. The publisher has said that this is geared towards children, specifically in that 4th to 6th grade range. So I guess like 9 to 11, 12, or 8 to 12 in that range. But I think it's universal in its themes. And if you're older than that, you can look at this and you will get something out of it. I think you'll enjoy it. So I enjoyed it and would encourage you all to check it out if you want. And of course, head on over to the Six Seasons Project. As I said at the start, that will be linked down below, or head on over to activehistory.ca. It'll be linked in the post accompanying this episode. So again, my thanks to Warren and William for their time. Really enjoyed getting to talk with them about the book and the project. And that will do it for this week. Thanks everybody for listening. If you have not yet, please do subscribe to the show wherever it is you get your podcast. Do the likes, ratings, comments, all that other good stuff. Helps other people find the show, keeps us growing here on the History Slam. And of course, do head on over, activehistory.ca. All of our past episodes are there under the podcast tab. And you can check out all the great written work this week. Some wonderful material about environmental history, climate change, and preserving the history of the changing climate, as well as some wonderful historical contextual material on the situation in Ukraine and the Russian invasion of Ukraine that is ongoing as we record this episode. If you're looking for some more historical context to what's happening over there. And if you want to let me know what you want to hear on the show, you can find me historyslam@gmail.com or on Twitter @TheSeanGraham. So thanks again for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week. But until then, if you're out and you see Enrico Palazzo, please say hi for me.
Thanks for listening to the History Slam podcast. Be sure to check out Active History for more features, articles, and be sure to subscribe on iTunes.